Lemons and oranges and peaches. Spin systems with continuous symmetries.
Okay, so thank you very much, Roland and Lina, for the invitation. It's a pleasure to speak in front of as many mathematicians and physicists. So as asked by Roland and Lina, I will split the talk in two parts. The first part will be a review of spin systems which have a continuous symmetry. So this will be the first part. And the second part, I will tell you, it will be a bit a rooftop ambience maybe for the future, why lemon, orange, and flat pitch follow different trajectories under the RG flow. So first part first. So I want to tell you about spin systems which live on a lattice, ZD. But in this talk, almost all the time, dimension will be D is equal to 2. So it will be the Z2 grid. And each point in this Z2 grid will carry a spin. Only the target space will change. In the first picture here, the target space is plus minus 1. The underlying symmetry is discrete. And it's, I think, well known to everyone in the room. It's called the Ising model. The second example here, which will be related to the pitch later on, is the XY model. So here, every point on Z2 carries spin in the unit circle S1. And this last example, which later on will be the orange, is the case where every spin carries an S2 valued spin, and it's called the classical Heisenberg model. The good news with these three models is that they share the same lattice, and they also share the same Gibbs measure. Each configuration of spin sigma, whatever the target space is here, will be, the probability will be proportional to exponential beta times a sum over edges I next to j. So this is an edges of Z2. This is another edge of Z2. And each of these edges will carry the scalar product sigma I times sigma j. So that when beta is large, the system will look very ordered, at least in a large enough window. And we'll see that if we really want to arbitrarily large windows, in this case here, the order may be completely lost. An equivalent way to consider these spin systems is to, the Gibbs measure is also exactly exponential minus beta over 2. And this time I sum over edges, not the scalar product, but an energy, it will be the Dirichlet energy along the edge. I will sum over all the edges of Z2, the gradient of the spin square. So depending on your viewpoint, either you want to maximize the sum of scalar product, or maybe if you're a physicist, you want to minimize the energy. So you want to minimize the Dirichlet energy you pay over each edge of your graph. Okay, so that's the three spin systems on dimension 2 that I will consider. Beta will always be the usual inverse temperature. So what I will do in this first part of the talk is, for each of these models, I would want to give you the way physicists think about the spin system, or at least the way I think I understood what physicists are trying to do with this spin system. I try to translates the way understood. Maybe I completely misunderstood. And I will also try to give you the mathematical way. And I will proceed as follows. For the Ising model, I will only give you the physics way, but the math way is extremely close to it. And all of what I'm going to talk about will be 2 minutes long and almost 100 years old. For the XY model, I insist I will give the two ways. And there, they are quite different from each other. I will give you the way Berzinski, Kostelis, Stavles have thought about it, and then I will give you the way Frölich and Spencer have thought about it. For the last model here, I wish I would give you a physics and a mass way, but I will only be able to give you a physics way. The mass way is lacking so far. So first, the Ising model. So that's the case where there is a discrete symmetry. So that's not supposed to be the overview Roland and Nina asked about. There's no underlying continuous symmetry in the target space. Still, it's, of course, a nice model. And that's a simulation stolen from the web, where I have a high-temperature Ising model here. I have the exactly critical Ising model here with its nice fractal structures. And when beta is large, the system picks a color, plus or minus, black or white, sticks to it, and there are only slow villages resisting to this ground state long-range order. So just for a couple of minutes, it's a little bit risky for me, but I will try to give you maybe the way physicists think about it. If you think that it's completely wrong, please tell me after the talk so that I keep some credibility. So I will hide the Peyer's argument with some words like excitations and things like this. So this is a, imagine a huge piece of 2D lattice with a way to break the symmetry outside, which would be a plus boundary condition outside, the blue condition. And now we want to understand how the easing model is reacting to temperature, to the fact beta is not infinite, temperature T is not zero, and there are thermal fluctuations. So how to apprehend this? Maybe there is this ground state, which is the blue ground state reacting to the boundary. And now there are some possible excitations which will break this ground state. Each excitation could be represented by a loop, a closed loop gamma. And we can see that one closed loop has a certain energy associated to it, and it's essentially beta times the, it's essentially the length of the loop. And so the energy of one such excitation in the Gibbs state is exponential minus beta times this length. The entropy is the number of such excitations of length n, and there is a classical fight between energy and entropy. And I insist on this argument because I will use the same argument for the phase transition for the XY model. So if beta is large, you pay a lot of energy, and the effect of this is that uniformly in the size of the system, of course, there will be some excitations here and there, but the probability to see a massive excitation of the scale of your domain can easily be seen to be very unlikely. So you will only see rather small excitations, and in the bulk of the system, the ground state will still be there, and you will still break the symmetry. As beta gets lower, as beta gets larger and temperature gets lower, no, the opposite. So I always confuse beta and T. As temperature gets higher, as beta gets lower, excitations are less costly in terms of energy. Entropy is still there, and so after a while, you start having more and more excitations piling up on each other in such an efficient way that in the bulk of the system, you completely forgot about the symmetry breaking you applied at the boundary. So this is, I think, the way physicists may explain easing model, though I could be completely wrong here. So I want to move now to a continuous symmetry. And this was the second example, the middle example in my talk, where each point in Z2, so this is a 500-500 picture stolen from Demidov, where each point carries a spin in the unit circle S1, and this pixel is colored according to the angle here. If the temperature T is very large, if beta is very small, this is a very disordered picture, while if the temperature is low, this looks like we have more structure coming into the picture, but still there is no dominant color, there is no dominant angle with small fluctuations around it. And this is for a well-known reason. This goes back to a theorem by Mermin and Wagner in the 60s. And what they've shown is that in dimension d is equal to 2, if you take any spin system which has a continuous symmetry, it could be XY, it could be classical Eisenberg, or it could be a Lie group valued spin system with a continuous symmetry there, like SO3, for example, then they've shown that it's impossible to break the symmetry. And the main argument they relied on is called an harmonic map. It's a property within harmonic analysis, which is such that if you try to break the symmetry outside, for example, here with the east pointing direction, and you ask yourself, how is it energetically costly to point in some other direction in the bulk of the system? They found out that there is a deterministic assignment of angles in this n by n box, which is such that you can slowly interpolate from one to the other in such a way that you only pay a Dirichlet energy, which vanishes to zero as the size of this domain grows to infinity. If you
If you
want
want
to do the exercise and get bored at
at
some
some
point,
point,
if
if
you
you linearly
linearly interpolate at linear
interpolate
speed from
from
the
the
band
band
A
A
to the
to
middle,
the
this
middle,
will
this will
not
not
go
go
to
to
zero.
zero.
So you need to do something a little bit smarter
Smarter.
here. And since it costs nearly zero energy to forget about the band A direction, they could show
Show
that
that
there
there
is
is no
no phase, no
phase
symmetry
symmetry
breaking
breaking
for
for
these
these
systems
systems
in
in
dimension
dimension
two.
two.
And
And
I
I
think
think
I
I
was
was
not
not
there
there
in
in
the
the
60s,
60s,
but
but
I've
I've
heard
heard
some
some
videos.
videos.
At
At
the
the
time,
time,
they
they
thought,
thought,
okay,
okay,
probably
probably
XY
XY
model,
model,
classical
classical
Heisenberg,
Heisenberg,
all
all
of
of
those
those
in
in
dimension
dimension
two,
two,
they're
they're
pretty
pretty
boring
boring
because
because
there
there
is
is
no
no
breaking
breaking
of
of
symmetry.
symmetry.
And
And
it
it
was
was
maybe
maybe
considered
considered
a
a
little
little
bit
bit
like
like
a
a
one-dimensional
one-dimensional
easing
easing
model.
model.
That
That
was
was
until
until
the
the
early
early
70s
70s
when
when
Berzinski,
Berzinski,
Kostolets,
Kostolets,
and
and
Taures
Taures
found
found
that
that
despite
despite
this
this
theorem
theorem
by
by
Mermin
Mermin
and
and
Wagner,
Wagner,
still
still
those
those
systems
systems
are
are
very
very
interesting.
interesting.
They
They
have
have
a
a
more
more
subtle
subtle
phase
phase
condition,
condition,
at
at
least
least
if
if
the
the
symmetry
symmetry
is
is
abelian.
abelian.
And
And
they
they
noticed
noticed
that
that
at
at
large
large
temperature,
temperature,
the
the
two-point
two-point
function,
function,
which
which
measures
measures
how
how
the
the
angle
angle
at
at
that
that
part
part
of
of
the
the
domain
domain
correlates
correlates
with
with
the
the
angle
angle
at
at
that
that
part
part
of
of
the
the
domain,
domain,
they
they
noticed
noticed
that
that
this
this
must
must
decay
decay
exponentially
exponentially
quickly.
quickly.
And
And
this
this
is
is
quite
quite
easy
easy
to
to
show
show
with
with
today's
today's
techniques
techniques
when
when
the
the
temperature
temperature
is
is
large,
large,
so
so
there's
there's
no
no
surprise
surprise
here.
here.
The
The
surprise
surprise
was
was
that
that
if
if
the
the
temperature
temperature
is
is
low,
low,
suddenly
suddenly
the
the
system
system
enters
enters
the
the
phase
phase
where
where
the
the
power,
power,
where
where
the
the
decay
decay
here
here
becomes
becomes
power
power
low.
low.
And
And
I
I
think
think
at
at
least
least
in
in
this
this
U-shaped
U-shaped
room,
room,
we
we
should
should
all
all
agree
agree
that
that
power
power
low
low
is
is
nice.
nice.
This
This
is
is
maybe
maybe
a
a
sign
sign
of
of
conformal
conformal
field
field
theory,
theory,
of
of
large-scale
large-scale
structures,
structures,
of
of
lots
lots
of
of
good
good
mathematics.
mathematics.
And
And
here
here
we
we
have
have
an
an
entire
entire
line
line
of
of
models
models
when
when
I
I
vary
vary
the
the
temperature
temperature
below
below
the
the
phase
phase
condition.
condition.
And
And
each
each
of
of
those
those
will
will
be
be
associated
associated
to
to
some
some
critical
critical
exponents
exponents
which
which
encode
encode
this
this
decay.
decay.
If
If
we
we
go
go
back
back
to
to
the
the
easing
easing
model,
model,
we
we
would
would
have
have
one
one
point,
point,
the
the
Onsager
Onsager
point
point
maybe,
maybe,
or
or
the
the
Kramers-Wagner
Kramers-Wagner
point.
point.
Only
Only
at
at
that
that
point
point
you
you
would
would
have
have
power
power
law
law
decay.
decay.
Here
Here
it's
it's
very
very
different.
different.
At
At
that
that
point
point
included
included
and
and
below,
below,
we
we
have
have
power
power
law
law
decay.
decay.
So
So
what
what
I
I
want
want
to
to
do
do
in
in
the
the
next
next
few
few
slides
slides
is
is
to
to
give
give
you
you
the
the
physics
physics
way
way
of
of
understanding
understanding
this
this
phase
phase
transition,
transition,
which
which
is
is
beautiful,
beautiful,
I
I
find.
find.
And
And
then
then
I
I
will
will
give
give
you
you
the
the
mass
mass
way.
way.
It's
It's
not
not
orthogonal
orthogonal
to
to
the
the
physics
physics
way,
way,
but
but
I
I
claim
claim
it's
it's
a
a
little
little
bit
bit
different.
different.
So
So
how
how
did
did
Berzinski,
Berzinski,
Kostolets,
Kostolets,
Taules
found,
explain
explain
this
this
phase
phase
transition?
transition?
They
They
started
started
with
with
the
the
Gibbs
Gibbs
measure,
measure,
which
which
I
I
had
had
written
written
before.
before.
So
So
it
it
was
was
exponential
exponential
beta
beta
sum
sum
over
over
edges
edges
of
of
my
my
graph,
graph,
which
which
were
were
the
the
nearest
nearest
neighbor
neighbor
edges,
edges,
scalar
scalar
product
product
of
of
the
the
S1
S1
spin
spin
at
at
I
I
with
with
the
the
S1
S1
spin
spin
at
at
the
the
point
point
just
just
next
next
to
to
it,
it,
which
which
is
is
J.
J.
The
The
scalar
scalar
product
product
of
of
S1
S1
valued
valued
spins,
spins,
if
if
you
you
know
know
about
about
trigonometry,
trigonometry,
this
this
is
is
just
just
a
a
cosine
cosine
of
of
the
the
difference
difference
of
of
angles.
angles.
So
So
a
a
good
good
idea
idea
is
is
to
to
reparametrize
reparametrize
the
the
S1
S1
valued
valued
spin
spin
system
system
by
by
0
0
to
to
2
2
pi
pi
angles
angles
theta
theta
I,
I,
where
where
I
I
are
are
still
still
the
the
vertices
vertices
of
of
my
my
graph.
graph.
So
So
you
you
can
can
write
write
down
down
the
the
Gibbs
Gibbs
measure
measure
this
this
way,
way,
and
and
now
now
you
you
may
may
try
try
to
to
Taylor
Taylor
expand
expand
this
this
cosine
cosine
with
with
the
the
idea
idea
that
that
if
if
beta
beta
is
is
very
very
large,
large,
maybe
maybe
the
the
gradient
gradient
will
will
tend
tend
to
to
be
be
typically
typically
very
very
small.
small.
So
So
if
if
you
you
do
do
this,
this,
you
you
at
at
large
large
scales,
scales,
you
you
may
may
understand
understand
your
your
Gibbs
Gibbs
measure
measure
as
as
exponential
exponential
minus
minus
beta
beta
over
over
2.
2.
And
And
the
the
energy
energy
that
that
you
you
are
are
analyzing
analyzing
is
is
a
a
Dirichlet
Dirichlet
energy
energy
on
on
the
the
field
field
of
of
angles.
angles.
And
And
now
now
comes
comes
maybe
maybe
the
the
main
main
observation.
observation.
This
This
field
field
of
of
angles
angles
in
in
this
this
two-dimensional
two-dimensional
plane,
plane,
you
you
should
should
not
not
think
think
of
of
it
it
as
as
a
a
zero
zero
form,
form,
as
as
a
a
function,
function,
but
but
instead
instead
as
as
a
a
one
one
form.
form.
Why
Why
that?
that?
If
If
I
I
take
take
a
a
point
point
here
here
and
and
a
a
point
point
here,
here,
and
and
now
now
I
I
take
take
any
any
path
path
which
which
goes
goes
from
from
this
this
first
first
point
point
to
to
the
the
second
second
point,
point,
if
if
beta
beta
is
is
very
very
large,
large,
if
if
the
the
temperature
temperature
is
is
very
very
small,
small,
the
the
gradients
gradients
of
of
angles
angles
are
are
going
going
to
to
be
be
very,
very,
very
very
tiny.
tiny.
So
So
it
it
will
will
be
be
possible
possible
to
to
make
make
sense
sense
of
of
how
how
does
does
the
the
angle
angle
moves
moves
along
along
this
this
path.
path.
How
How
do
do
I
I
move
move
continuously
continuously
along
along
the
the
S1
S1
circle?
circle?
But
But
if
if
I
I
were
were
to
to
take
take
a
a
completely
completely
different
different
path
path
here,
here,
it
it
will
will
still
still
be
be
very
very
well
well
defined,
defined,
but
but
it
it
might
might
be
be
that
that
when
when
I
I
reach
reach
the
the
same
same
final
final
point,
point,
the
the
angle
angle
that
that
I
I
will
will
have
have
computed
computed
will
will
be
be
the
the
same
same
modulo
modulo
a
a
monodromy
monodromy
of
of
plus
plus
2
2
pi,
pi,
plus
plus
4
4
pi,
pi,
minus
minus
2
2
pi.
pi.
So
So
all
all
this
this
to
to
say
say
that
that
to
to
a
a
path,
path,
I
I
can
can
associate
associate
a
a
gradient
gradient
of
of
angle,
angle,
but
but
different
different
paths
paths
may
may
not
not
agree,
agree,
and
and
they
they
may
may
accumulate
accumulate
monodromies
monodromies
in
in
between.
between.
This meant that this random one form that we're trying to understand, its randomness may arise from two things. It may arise from a zero form on the one hand, and it may also arise from a two forms if this one form happened to be non-exact. So that's the basis of their analysis. And if the model is slightly different from the XY model, it's called the Villain model. I will not define it, but it's a very close cousin. It can be rigorously proved that the zero-form source of randomness is actually independent from the two-form source of randomness. This one is known as a Gaussian free field, and this gives rise to the imaginary complex exponential of a GFF, which is a very nice object on its own, as we've seen in previous talks. But if you take the complex exponential of a GFF, you will never see any BKT transition. The only mechanism to break power law into exponential law will come from the Coulomb gas, which I will not define, but talk about in the next slide. So what is this Coulomb gas? The source of randomness coming from the two form describes places where we do accumulate monodromies around these plaquettes. And the argument of Berezinski, Kosolets, and Taules is that every time you have such a monodromy, such a defect, they call those topological defects, you will need to find somewhere else an anti-vortex so that if you take the integral around the big box, you don't accumulate too much angles around the box. So typically, a vortex will come with an anti-vortex at a certain distance. And now comes a similar argument as I did for the easing model. It was targeted to do it now for the XY model. You can ask yourself, what is the energy that you pay if you want to produce an isolated pair of vortex and anti-vortex? It's easy to check that if you try to compute the sum over the edges of the gradient squared here, what you will end up with is a constant times the log of the Euclidean distance between the vortex and the anti-vortex. So each isolated pair of vortex and anti-vortex will come with a log n energy price in such a way that if beta is small, if the temperature is high, every pair of vortex will pay this polynomial cost, but the entropy, the way of choosing a vortex and an anti-vortex is n to the 4, basically. So the entropy at large temperature may easily win over the energy. So now as beta grows, at some point, this energy term will start to be too much compared to the entropy. And that's basically where the BKT transition will happen. So there is an analog situation. It's called the two-component Coulomb gas in R2. And there is a very nice recent work by Jeanne Boursier and Sylvia Serfati, where they analyze how these vortices and anti-vortices cluster together all the way to the BKT transition. So back to the lattice, if beta is now very large, what happens is that you will still have vortices and anti-vortices everywhere in your 2D domain, but it will be very hard for them to be separated from each other at macroscopic distance. That it could...
Can you clarify that energy is for a particular single there?
Yes, the easy computation here is for one isolated pair. If you start having a typical configuration, which is a positive density of vortices, it's much harder to make sense of this. And that's why I find it's hard to make these heuristics by Berezinski, Kosolets, Taules a rigorous proof.
Okay.
But if you just had one pair of vortices, anti-vortices, then you can compute the optimal way of achieving this. It's like an harmonic map. And this costs log n.
And so this argument is for comparing a very sparse collection of pairs with having nothing at all.
Exactly. So maybe compared to the easing model, I should say that the XY model has this GFF fluctuation, which will always be power law. And on top of this GFF, you have these vortices, which will make even more disorder. And when you have tons of those far away from each other, it actually produces exponential decay. So this transition is also called the vortex-anti-vortex binding-unbinding phenomenon. And that's the physics way. Unless there are questions, I want to go to the mathematical way now. And this is a picture also stolen from the web, and I just tried to indicate the vortices versus the anti-vortices. Hopefully I did not make a mistake. Okay,
Okay,
so
so
I will move now to the way mathematicians have managed to rigorously prove this prediction from BKT.
So is there some, but can you come up with some artificial model where you could tune the capacity of vortices so that it would be clear that a single pair dominates and everything else is subleading because it's just ordered progressive? So for the particular lattice model you're considering, of course, you don't have this option. Gravity is fixed, whatever it is.
So I don't know if this answers the question, but you can, on a lattice, you can make a Coulomb gas which has a z to the power the number of.
Yeah, that's what I have.
And if you do this, then there is a very nice diagram which captures z and beta simultaneously. And along this diagram, you can see the RG flow. And there is a very nice work by, I will state this work in 5 minutes, where in some sense they use this small fugacity explanation.
And there, are you in better shape with respect to this physics argument?
So as far as I understand, if your fugacity is extremely small, then you're in a much greater shape. You can actually even compute exponents. So there is a Pierre Falco, but there is also a work I will mention of Borchin, Park, and Rodriguez about this.
Christophe, could you repeat the questions? Because it's hard to...
Oh, yes. So the question was, here, I will rephrase it here. If I look at the Villain model or the XY model, there are vortices and anti-vortices all over the place. But I try to generalize this model by adding a fugacity, which maybe forces more vortices or less vortices. So it's another parameter which does not exist in this model. And if you play with this fugacity, when the fugacity is small, you can reach more phenomenology than in this model, like more exponents.
So this is so-called modified Villain, where you, a field which is found in plaquettes, you treat as a background field, not as a thermic. Which couples to the
so
around plaquettes.
So I think I will try to rephrase. So is it a general, the question is it like in a generalized Villain? So I think indeed the Villain model is something you could see as a model which lives along the edges of the graph. And you could ask for each plaquette, you could penalize that it's actually trying to make a monodromy there. And then, yes, indeed, it would be a bit like having a small fugacity Z. That's correct. Okay, so in Nicolas, well, it's very balanced so far. Okay, so a few words about the way it has been understood in math. So the breakthrough work here was in the early 80s by Frölich and Spencer. And to make the story short, I could maybe say the following. If you want to prove that a phase transition holds for a S1 valued model, which goes from exponential to quasi-long range order to power law decay, there is a difficulty, which is that you don't have any other parameter to play with a priori. So the idea was to go to a different model where the other parameter was easier to find. And what they've done is that they used that the Fourier dual of S1 is Z. So they basically wrote this model in the Fourier side. So they Fourier transformed the XY or the Villain model. And they end up with a dual model, which is now living on the plaquettes of Z2, but the proof is that the plaquette of Z2 is still Z2. And each such plaquette will now carry not a S1 valued spin, but a Z valued spin. So this is called a Z valued height function. And the easy part of BKT, at least on the lattice, is sent to the easy part of the dual model, which is a low temperature Z valued height function model, which localizes at least at very high temperature, here very low, the dual temperature is the inverse. Payol's argument comes back, excitations, as I did before, comes back, and the model will typically be very flat. The difficult part was here, which is in correspondence with the difficult part of BKT, and there they were able to prove that the Z-valued Gaussian free field, or the dual of the XY model, which is a bit more complicated to write down, delocalizes at low temperature for XY, which goes to high temperature for the dual model. This delocalization property was the hard part of the proof. And In fact, the way they do the proof uses a little bit intuition from the Coulomb gas, a little bit of intuition from binding on binding, but not exactly that.
Is this Z value height function same homogeneous of the pocket or the one by the line?
Ah, so the Z valued height function, it doesn't have monodromies. It's really a zero form.
Is it the value?
Oh, good question. So if I take a Villain model and I look at the fields of monodromies, this is a very nice probabilistic object. It's exactly a Coulomb gas. So it's an integer valued Gaussian. This model is exactly the Poisson summation dual of this. So not a monodromy, but very related.
Isn't it true that in this mathematics proof, there is also an interesting hermitation group interpretation on the hard part where you're trying to start in the model which has a uniform distribution of fields and then you just try to perturb it by some periodic potential?
Right. So I think this RG flow that you are mentioning is exactly what
both in part coding guys have been doing.
But
I will mention it in this slide.
So then, I think this dichotomy about physics is not physics people think in terms of both of especially nowadays.
Okay. Maybe nowadays, but if I read Berezinski cos Torres Torres, they compute log n and they say exponential minus beta log n is fine. And so, but okay, I think what you have in mind, maybe I will switch to this one. If you take this dual model, which has this Gibbs measure, so beta is large, which means this is I inverted the usual temperature. So in this case, if you are at a very large beta, which is like very high temperature Z-valued GFF, Boschmidt, Park-Rodriguez, in a very important work, have shown that at large scales, this will look like a GFF, but the temperature maybe changed a little bit. And here, indeed, it's in the realm of sine Gordon, and there is an activity, and you run this flow. And this also follows a physics argument. I fully agree with this, but the 70s, I'm not as sure as that. So there is this key work. Proof of delocalization here, as I mentioned, was by Frobisher and Spencer. There is a more recent work by Pete Lammers. So his work is based more on the techniques developed by Scott Sheffield. Based on this new proof by Pete Lammers, there are now new proofs of BKT phase transition. All of these proofs go through the dual at some point by Van Engel and Boglis and Eisenman, RLP, and Shapiro. Both works give a very nice new point of view. More modest, but with Abellio Sepulveda, we could show that if you look at this effective temperature, the hard part is the existence of it. We could show that it must deviate from what the GFF would do. So that's the contribution of the vortices. And last item, maybe there are many directions. Last year, Ott and Schweiger, they could extend the delocalization to non-convex potentials. And today on archive, we have a different proof of this with Paul Dario and Diedrich von Engelenburg. Maybe one interesting aspect of this is that if you take the dual models of these, they are more general S1 valued models. They include the Villain, the XY, and many others. And one consequence of this paper is that all of those also have a BKT fast transition. So it extends the possible models for which you have BKT. A last sentence about BKT, which there were some talk so far about what's going on in hyperbolic geometry. So I have a work in progress with Diedrich where we identify a BKT transition on the H2, which would not exist on H3. And just to explain in 1 second where this comes from, there is the same battle of energy and entropy than we have in dimension 2. Why that? So if I were to do an XY model on this hyperbolic plane, maybe I will also spot vortices and anti-vortices. And as I did before, it's not very hard to see that if I have a plus and a minus at hyperbolic distance n from each other, this will cost the energy n this time. It's linear in the hyperbolic distance, while in two dimensions it was logarithmic in the distance. But now the battle is adding dimension 2 at exponential minus beta times hyperbolic distance, but the volume in hyperbolic graph itself is also exponential. So when you look at it, you feel that depending on the value of beta, you may have either vortex binding or vortex unbinding, and that's what we do in this work with Kubrick.
Should we just follow from conformal invariance for the phase transition one? For the phase transition, here is conformal invariant, you don't distinguish plane from kind of polyvalent plane.
I think here it's a bit different because the S1 valued model has a very different phase transition. It will have actually long range boundary.
H2 is the dark space or?
No, no, H2 is the base space. I mean, at least from the S1 valued spin system, this is going to be a long range order phase. So very different from the Poisson range order on Z2. So we can discuss later, but I think it's quite different with energy. But the entropy energy, I agree, is very similar. Yeah. Okay, that's a good point. So maybe I can answer by saying that we first tried to do the Froelich-Spencer argument, but to push it further to try to have the binding unbinding there. But because of the volume growing this fast, the combinatorics collapsed. So at least via another route, maybe, but we did face an issue here. Yes. So if you are in Z2, you have BKT, Z3, you don't, Z4, you don't, and so on. And then H2 strikes back, and then H3 is lost again. So H2 has a very nice harmonic analysis particularity that there are many ways to perturb harmonic functions without construction.
The beta effective is equal to beta in this case, I guess.
That's a good question. I should know. I don't know. I don't think so, but it's a good question. So the question by Roland is the beta effective the same as the beta here as opposed to two dimension? So what do we mean by beta effective? So there will be a GFF indexed by the vertices of the hyperbolic graph. I still think restricting it to the integers will lower fluctuations, but we've been discussing a lot this year together, and every time you were right, so I don't want to go too far. So I want to go to the classical Heisenberg now for a short time. And so now every spin carries a S2 valued spin. And Polyakov predicted in 75 that it should have exponential decay at arbitrarily low temperature. So in other words, Polyakov predicted that this BKT phenomenon that I just explained for the S1 valued spin system does not hold when you go to S2 valued spin system. You might say that if you believe this prediction, maybe this spin system is as boring as the one-dimensional easing model, because easing model also has exponential decay at all temperature. It's not really boring, because if you solve this, it's considered, for many good reasons, a great toy model to understand confinement property for SU3 gauge theory on Z4, which many people in the audience are more experts than I am. So I want to focus very shortly on the physics argument here. I will go quickly for two reasons. I'm running a bit off time for what I want to say next. And also, there are really bigger experts than me. So how did Polyakov understood that there should be exponential decay at whole temperatures? So it goes as follows. So you sample the S2 valued spin system in the Z2 graph. That's the original model I started with. And maybe you want to coarse grain this a little bit. So maybe you want to represent That's called the background field method. You want to represent in which average direction this box is pointing to, in which average direction this other box is pointing to, and you end up with the signal, a coarse-grained signal, which is living at relatively low frequencies. The actual spin system in S2 is, in some sense, the combination of this low-frequency signal, this coarse-grained S2 valued field, with a higher frequency signal, which tells you the details of where the S2 spin system lives near these slow mode S2 valued spins. And now you do this great business of RG flow in this background field method. You try to average out what the small scales are doing. You try to average out what the high frequency modes are doing, and try to see what you end up with on the coarse-grained S2 valued spin system. And what you notice, I always struggle, but what you eventually notice is that if you remove lots of higher order terms, after one step of the RG flow, putting aside these higher order terms, the beta that you have in front of this coarse-grained S2 valued spin system is slightly smaller than the one you started with. And that's how I think Polyakov predicted that if you keep doing this RG flow to go to higher and higher scales, eventually this effective beta will become smaller and smaller and will enter the regime where it's easy to find exponential decay. As I said, I don't have a mass counterpart to this prediction. It's my favorite conjecture, and it's a well-known conjecture in the field. But I want to go to the second part, where I want to discuss the following question. If you take the Polyakov model, what happens if you slightly perturb the Polyakov model? So the Polyakov will be the orange. I mean, the orange will never appear again in the slides. But the perturbation will either go to the lemon or to the flat pitch. So before we go to the lemon and the flat pitch, I want to describe two, I think, natural perturbations of the classical Eisenberg model. The first natural perturbation, which I think would be the first that physicists in the room would agree with, would be to say that we could slightly perturb the Riemannian metric that we equip the sphere with. So this would be the round metric. Here I would still view my spin system as an S2 valued spin system, but the metric I would use to build a Gibbs measure would be the push forward metric from a slightly flatter ellipsoid. So if you slightly perturb the metric with epsilon and then send beta to infinity, we conjecture with my co-author
de Montgolfier
that at least if you have enough symmetry, but we believe maybe this is not even necessary, but just to make the conjecture a bit more narrow, we conjecture that the phenomenology of Polyakov still prevails. You would still have exponential decay at arbitrarily large beta. Why do we conjecture that? This comes from the fact that there is a work after Polyakov, which is very beautiful. I don't understand much of it, even though I asked Slava to help me, and this was a huge help, but I still struggle very much. So Dan Friedan, in 1980, he came up with an understanding of the renormalization group flow of more general spin systems than classical Eisenberg, precisely of those spin systems here. And he found out that along the RG flow, the relevant thing to follow is the Ricci flow of this Riemannian metric. And if I slightly perturb the round metric, it will flow to the round sphere quicker than the way beta is evolving. So if one takes that, I think Slava agreed, but Schenker disagreed. So I cannot blame either of the two. It was short discussion. But we conjecture the Ricci flow gives the right behavior, and that the Polyakov phenomenology is exactly the same for this perturbation. The second perturbation I will now explain to you is more this lemon and the flat pitch. I should have changed my slide. So another natural perturbation that you could come up with is instead of changing the metric, maybe you want to change the scalar product that I used before to define the Gibbs measure. So here, the sigma spin attached to each vertex of Z2, I will write those in the coordinates of R3, sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3. If lambda is equal to 1, this is just exactly the classical Heisenberg model I played with up to now. But I want to slightly change the strength of the third component, which in my pictures will be the vertical component. So if lambda is larger, I'm basically having a Lehmann-valued spin system, which puts more strength to spins pointing in the north or south direction. Lambda is equal to 1 is the perfect orange, and this is the flat pitch. So what are the known results here? If lambda is pretty large, Bortz and Griffiths have shown in the 70s that at low enough temperature, the spin system will catch an easing phase. It will be either very close to the North Pole or very close to the South Pole. The gap was filled by Malyshev and Frölichlieb in the late 70s, where they proved that this is still true for a lemon arbitrarily close to the orange. And in this work by Frölich and Lieb, they introduced this chessboard estimate, which happened to be very useful since then. So now I will cross over to the flat pitch, and Brickman, Leibovitz, Pfister, they conjectured that if you go to the flat pitch at any lambda less than 1, if you slightly perturb the classical Heisenberg model, now a big KT phase should arise. In fact, while they conjectured this, they actually proved the conjecture was long when lambda is exactly equal to 0, which doesn't give any strength to the vertical direction. Soon after, Dunlop proved that if lambda is small enough, if you take a very flat pitch, if you just push hard on your pitch, then indeed at very low temperature, the spin system will experience a power law decay phase along the equator here. So now comes our main theorem with Nathan de Montgolfier. What we can show is that for arbitrarily small perturbation of the classical Heisenberg model in this second sense, because in the first sense we conjecture it's a different phenomenology, then yes, a BKT phase sticks in. Here is the second theorem, which has some quotation marks. I will explain what is going on here. So since we have many physicists in the room, it may be interesting to ask what the RG flow is doing on this perturbation. So maybe it's natural to try to plot in the plane where I have the temperature here and I have the amount of perturbation in the vertical axis. What's going on? What is the phase which would be exponentially decaying? What is the phase which would be long range order and easing light? And what is the phase which would be BKT? Of course, we do not prove where the lines are exactly, because if we were to prove this, it would be more difficult than Polyakov's conjecture, or Polyakov's prediction. But the first part of this theorem is actually not our contribution. It's Slava during a lunch at IHES on pieces of paper this big, where he helped us understanding what should be the curve here along the RG flow. So we'll try to explain this in the paper as best as we can. But where we do have a theorem is in the, so that's supposedly the RG flow. What we are doing in the second part of this paper is we take a target space where exponential decay is actually known rigorously. And this is in a work by Boerschmidt, Elmus, and Swan, where they show that if you take the hemisphere, so there's no SO3 symmetry, but still you take the hemisphere, there is exponential decay of correlation in the two coordinates that are along the plane here. And so this is known, this is their theorem. And what we do with Nathan is we try to understand up to which deformation of the hemisphere we can push the exponential decay phase. And the good news is we can reach the line that Slava helped us to understand with the RG flow. So at least for the hemisphere, we do have a rigorous explanation of this RG law. So in the rest of this talk, what I want to do is to explain to you how we prove theorem one. And I will do it in two steps. The first step, I will tell you how to reprove why a very flattened pitch must have a BKT phase when the temperature is small. So I will reprove Dunlop theorem. And then I will want to explain to you why there is a barrier, why there is a lambda zero above which we need to do something else. And the second step will require properties of harmonic maps that are a well-studied object in analysis. And why do we need harmonic maps? To close the gap and go all the way to the orange. So the first thing I do here is I recall what the model here. My spins are S2 valued. I write those in those three coordinates of R3. And lambda tells you how much strength do I give to the third coordinate. So the Gibbs measure is proportional to exponential beta sums over this modified scalar product between neighboring sites. The first ID that we use is the following. It's a classical ID which goes back maybe at least to Patras, Cuyu, Zeiler. I will say a word about that. So the idea that they had is that they can look at this S2 valued spin system and they can ask about the following natural probabilistic question, condition on the vertical direction on the sigma 3 field, what is the law of the remaining randomness? So probabilistic wise, they sample the third coordinate. This P lambda measure is the measure we are interested in. It's a complicated measure. And I want to understand what is the remaining randomness if you give to me the positions, the vertical positions on the S2 field. And the observation, which goes back to Patras, Kuzalo, or even older, I don't know, is that the conditional law of the remaining randomness to sample is extremely simple to write down. It's exactly an XY model, as we had in the first part of this talk. The only difference is that it's an XY model in a random disorder of conductances. The conductance from this point to this point is beta times the radius here for the S1 spin times the radius here. So it's very simple to describe condition on this and using Pythagoras theorem and nothing else. What is the field of random conductances where the spin in S1 still needs to be sampled? So if you do Polyakov conjecture, that was what Patras, Cuyu, Zeiler used to try to argue against Polyakov. A few years ago with Yuan here and Abelio Sepulveda, we rediscussed Patras, Cuyu, Zeiler, and we basically gave a counterexample to their argument against Polyakov. Of course, we did not prove Polyakov's prediction at all, but we provided a counterexample to their analysis in the 90s, which I think physicists didn't believe the analysis anyway. But I really liked the idea to try to test how robust power law decay could be in this projected ID. In this work, we definitively go through Patras, Cuyu, Zeiler ID, but this time we get a theorem. Why? Because we get some control on this random disorder when we project the flat pitch system down to an X1. So in... do I have 5 minutes? I think I do.
Take 5 minutes.
We started at 20. Right. So according to... What?
Including question.
Right. So... No.
Just think.
Yes. Less questions. I take five. And... So the idea... is that this field of conductances is too hard to describe, but the proof is trying to control the disorder by comparing with a percolation disorder. So the idea is to try to say that maybe there is a stochastic domination between this field of conductances and a nicer field of conductances, which would be percolation disorder. And here, with Paul Dariou a few years ago, we proved that if you try to do XY model on a percolation disorder, then at low enough temperature, you will still have quasi-long-range order on such percolation clusters all the way to the percolation transition. So the idea with Nathan de Montgolfier is that if lambda is very small, we observe that it's not too difficult to prove that we can stochastically dominate our field of conductances with a Bernoulli, with an IID field of disorders. And the idea is simple. If you want to have stochastic domination, you can try to condition on all the spin field outside of one point and try to prove that whatever you see outside, you still have a high probability to be far from North Pole or South Pole. So this doesn't work because if you're unlucky and the four points around you are close to the North Pole, even if you have a very flat pitch, you will still be want to be very close to the North Pole at low temperature. So this does not work, but if we make it slightly bigger, if we now look at the neighborhood of just one edge, now we can have a lemma which says that if the pitch is flat enough, yes, with high probability, uniformly on what we see away from us, we will have two spins which will both be far from the North Pole. Just to tell you why, imagine you're very unlucky and the six S2 valued spins around you are all north pointing spins. Because of the flat pitch, the system will still want to simultaneously point to a direction and be far to the North Pole. So our argument is based just on the behavior of the harmonic maps, the ground states uniformly in the neighborhood. This argument is rather soft, but it doesn't work when lambda is bigger than 1 over 100. As lambda goes to 1, it's easy to see that we are forced to analyze situations which go at farther and further radii. So as lambda goes to infinity, we need to understand uniformly in what we may see outside of a ball of radius r, how does the harmonic maps, how does the least energetic pitch-valued function may look. And being in New York was actually quite useful this year because I could discuss with Feng Guolin and with Nathan, we tried to use proof techniques that were used in harmonic analysis of harmonic maps. And we could show that they're not as ordered, as regular as we were hoping for. If we had regular harmonic functions, the linear problem, everything would be very regular. Here it's less regular, but we have enough weak regularity to conclude. And the weak regularity that we used is something Sylvia knows very well. It's of Ginzburg-Landau type. And plugging this with the work by Paul Dario to propagate BKT on a percolation disorder, we could handle this arbitrary small perturbation of S2. I will end here. Thank you.
Right. So we had already lively interactions, but we can continue with a few questions. Do you think the methods apply also to the real projective space model, or you take a square beta product instead of beta product to the exponential?
Yes, it's a good question. It's a good question. I believe so. So indeed, if the Gibbs measure is now exponential beta sum of scalar product squares, the model is a model of random lines instead of random points on the sphere. This is also believed to have exponential decay arbitrarily. Oh, no? Oh, these are very interesting. If this is proved to, if it's believed to be wrong, then I want to go on this model and see what's going on.
Can you explain? Can you explain this boundary deformation in the language of non-linear signal model? What is the effect on the field?
Okay, so the question is how does this where would this appear in the language of nonlinear sigma model? So I think the first perturbation on which we don't have a result and we believe this would go like Polyakov to exponential decay at all beta, this would be, this would fit well within nonlinear sigma models. Right. Here, I don't change the metric, I change the scalar product. Yes, so it's more like adding a small potential term. One way to see the difference is that a nonlinear sigma model, the ground states could be in any directions.
No, the metric is generic metric,
Well, so let me go here. If I take this perturbed, this first perturbation here, here, even if I have this flat domain, if I don't talk about entropy, if I take any constant field, I pay exponential zero. So in that sense, these perturbations will have more ground state than the one we consider with modifying scalar product. Because this second perturbation, only the point in the equator will be.
So then you just need to look at the RG equations involved in the additional calculus.
Yes, and I think that's what Slava was doing on this piece of paper in IHS, though he wasn't, he didn't. Okay, thank you.
Can you call him? What is known about the energy flow for the non-equilibrium model from any arguments? I agree. Did people try to follow the energy flow at this and the reason our base is large? And...
You mean what would be known rigorously about implementation? So, so I think maybe I'm wrong, but one first difficulty is this background field method to even define precisely what would be this low mode background field around which we're trying to expand. So I think this is.
But I'm pretty sure I've seen some papers in the field, there's some papers of the crack trying to easily put follow on it, you know. Then you just know what's the same as both.
So Balaban, I have never read Balaban, to be honest, but maybe indeed he implemented the rigorous RG flow, which gives long-range order for such nonlinear sigma model when you are in dimension 3. So it's an implementation of RG flow to detect that indeed you do break the symmetry in dimension 3. Indeed, I've never read, I should have. It's a good question to ask. What does this argument do in dimension 2 regarding this question here? Being in New York, I would just knock on Roland's office and I think you would know more. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, such an issue, then. Like, more right.
Not sure I can say anything. Sense for everyone. We can talk later.
Yeah, one last question.
Yes, the question marks theorem. So the question is, what do we do in theorem 2? So theorem 2 is a first, we'll try to explain as best as we can what is this conjectured line between the exponential decay and the power law decay using RG flow, which probably follows your question that there is a potential and there is the classical Heisenberg type. And the theorem is in the case of a hemisphere where it is known that there is exponential decay at arbitrarily low temperature. Here we can still change the scalar product and ask ourselves when does BKT kicks in. And our theorem is that BKT does kick in at low enough temperature, but our theorem will never go to this RG curve, but it will go all the way to lambda equals one. And the other side of the theorem is that we manage to extend the proof by Borschmidt and Muth and Swan with a scalar product perturbation all the way to this curve. Right, so those blue curves are exponential decay is still here, still here, still here. And then we don't know. And then here we know that there is power law decay. That's what the theorem says.
you know.